It's over. It's all over. The drought. The dam wall is busted. It's 62 long years.
It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
This is the Sports Desk podcast right here on Sin. Hello all and welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Desk podcast here on Sin. I'm your host Ben Pascuzzi and we're back here for the first time in like a month with Lucy Watkin.
Hello Ben, I think everyone thought that the depths of winter was over, but as we can probably hear from our voices, we are still very much stuck.
I've got a cold. I don't know about you, but
cold blustery Melbourne.
Yeah, it's not good. Not good weather at all.
I also like that you're repping a Brisbane Lions beanie. So
thank
faithful.
You. Thanks for noticing. Oh, I'm getting really passionate now watching the boys. We're starting to get really close. And yeah, on last night we did pretty well, but weren't able to come away with the win. But what can you do? And speaking of AFL, we'll start off with AFL actually, and it's just been an incredible season, and it's just really enthralling and hard to predict pretty much every match. So, Lucy, what are we going to do? We're going to try and predict. Do the impossible, and we're going to try and predict. And we're going to try and predict the top four from what we've seen so far. So, Lucy, let's go through the top four at the moment as it plays after round 20. So, Adelaide are on top of the ladder. They sit ahead of GWS, Richmond and Geelong. So Adelaide 58 points actually. GWS 52, Richmond 52 as well, and Geelong 50.
And then we've got Port, Sydney, Bulldogs, Essendon to round out the eight. Now, I am a Sydney Swans supporter and we're sixth. We face a bit of a tough run home. Like, we have three very tough games to finish off the season, including Adelaide at Adelaide Oval. But I also think that Geelong, Joel Selwood is facing surgery.
Yeah.
Dangerfield. Maybe be a bit timid after that suspension.
We'll talk about that
And we are going to talk about that. Port Adelaide, I would honestly think, are the biggest pretenders of the league.
Yes, thank you. Them and West Coast.
God. So,
well, the Port, even though they sit fifth, they sit on 44 points, and Essendon, right down to St Kilda, they all sit on 40 points, so a game behind them. So Port could very well, in 3 weeks, find themselves outside the eight, although they sit in fifth position at the moment.
Well, you know, that's the story of St Kilda. They've been fifth, I think, three times this season. And I was saying to someone earlier today, I was like, all St Kilda players slash their supporters must have whiplash from just looking up and down the ladder so many times.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think Geelong, in the form that they're having, could finish fifth and Sydney round out the four, because I don't see Adelaide, GWS or Richmond leaving.
Yeah, I think that top three stands, and because GWS have a tough run home, that's the thing, but so do Richmond. So it's hard to tell. So we think that Adelaide will finish top on the ladder. They've pretty much proved this season that they are the top side, although they had a couple of poor performances early on midway through the season. They've pulled their socks up and proven to the competition that they are the first place team. So next week they take on Essendon and Etihad. That's a bit of a danger game for them, but with them, 2.5 games clear at the top of the ladder, they're safe there.
Yeah.
With Sydney, they take on Adelaide round 22, and then in their final round match they take on Carlton. And if we remember correctly, that was when the whole AFL world were just like, oh no, Sydney, they are not going to make finals. They are dead and buried. And I think you were 0-6 at that stage.
Yep.
So
that was the game that made us 0-6 against Carlton, that game. So for Sydney, I think that just sums up the season, that if Sydney finishes in the top four but started the season with 0 wins and 6 losses, that just sums up really the season.
Yeah, but with Geelong, because you guys want to take Geelong's spot, you take them on, Richmond take on Geelong next week, and it's at Simmons. Why is it at Simmons? That's a bit of a strange one, because there's been talk about...
Did they not have three games at Simmons in a row?
let's have a look. So they played Sydney this week. Who'd they play last week?
Oh, no, this was a lot earlier in the season.
Oh, a lot earlier. But, probably did. Who knows? But they've played two in a row now. Mm. So, yeah, that's going to be a crunch game there, Geelong and Richmond. So whoever wins that one, if Geelong win that one, I think they stay in the top four.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for you. But, yeah, it's going to be very tight. I don't really see the top four changing as much as I want Sydney to make it, purely because of the fact that Geelong, they are a game and a half ahead. So even if Sydney win, although they do have a better percentage than Geelong, if they win, they're going to have to win two.
Yeah.
And Geelong's going to have to lose twice for them to make it. So I think the top four stays as Adelaide, GWS, Richmond and Geelong. However, I do see Richmond taking second spot because GWS have quite a difficult run home. So so the Tiger fans, they may want to start, potentially they will do it, but they may want to start booking their the grand final tickets. But they haven't won a final since, who knows.
Since the last time they didn't finish ninth.
When was the last time they won finals? Oh, well, no one ever knows. I probably wasn't even born back then when they won the final.
Oh,
so it'll be interesting to see how Richmond go.
And speaking of that, so if you say that, is your grand final prediction then Richmond versus
GWS?
No, in the grand final.
Yeah.
Is that going to be your prediction?
I don't know if Richmond make the final, though, in the grand final. I know Tiger supporters will book their tickets, but grand final prediction, I'm going to go Sydney from fifth, and they'll take on Adelaide.
That's my call too.
Hang on, because you got to see the way they do it. So it'll be the winner out of one and four plays the winner out of six and seven, is it?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Yep, it'll be Sydney against Adelaide. That's my prediction. As much as I want to see Richmond make it, and as I've said, they'll finish second, I think, I just don't see them producing it in September. I think they'll win a final, though.
They might be a little bit overawed by the occasion.
Yeah. I think they'll potentially lose that first final, and if not, they'll definitely lose the preliminary. That's my thoughts anyway.
Yeah.
Nick, I could all be wrong. Who knows? I mean, it's so hard to predict anything this season.
But I reckon, I think that the sports desk consensus is that from here we're seeing Adelaide and Sydney are the best, like the informed teams at the moment.
That's purely why I think Sydney, even though they won't finish in the top four, I think they'll still make the grand final.
Mm.
I think they've just proven it time and time again that they're reliable in September. And this season, especially the latter half of this season, they are just in some sublime form. They pulled Geelong's pants down on Friday night.
They did. On
their home turf. And they were the last team as well to beat Geelong at Simmons. So they've beaten them twice in a row at Simmons Stadium when playing Geelong. So got a good record down there. But nevertheless, Sydney, I think, grand final. Yourself?
I think Sydney, grand final. No bias. This is honestly no bias. But with all of the teams in there, I just can't see sort of... So if Sydney finishes, say, fifth, just outside the four, and your last ones is, as it stands, like Port, Western Bulldogs and Essendon, I can't see any of those three teams sort of making it past that first round, which, you know, as we've said, you could be surprised, but I can't see any of them making it past there. But I do see Sydney taking them on, and we've beaten all four of those teams except for Adelaide. So if we beat Adelaide in that game coming up,
that'll be interesting.
Then,
and that's at Adelaide Oval as well.
Exactly. So if we can beat Adelaide,
you play them in the Granny, you'll play them in the G.
Yeah.
And Adelaide. Well, they played well against Collingwood. That was a good draw, that one. Mitch McGovern's mark. So back to Richmond. Last time they won a final was 2001. So I was born. I was two. Sorry to clarify that for the Richmond supporters out there. So it's been 16 years since they've won a final. They can do it.
I reckon, yeah.
They'll win a final, I think, this year if they finish top two. Even if they'll finish top four, they'll win one. They should.
Yeah.
But if we remember last time when they finished fifth, they lost to ninth place. Coincidentally, it was against Carlton, and it was ninth place when Essendon, was that 11, 12, whenever it was, when Essendon had the drug saga. Thank God that's over with, by the way.
Yeah, true.
I know it's not on the run sheet, but how about your bottom four?
As in on the ladder?
Yeah. Who do you think's... Oh, as in of the eight.
Oh, of the eight.
Your second half of the eight. Who finishes in fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth?
I think Melbourne's...
This is definitely harder to predict.
Yeah, I think Melbourne's done.
You think they're cooked?
I think they're done. And I think the only other team that could possibly get in there is St Kilda now. So I think Essendon up, St Kilda...
I can't do it. I'm just looking at the fixture. We saw St Kilda. They're playing Melbourne next week.
I think they can beat Melbourne. That's why I say Melbourne's out of it.
I don't know. I like Melbourne. I predicted them to make the finals. I'm going to stick with my prediction. I still reckon they can do it. Yeah. They got Gawney back, but yeah, injuries are just going to kill them, maybe. But I say them. Oh, but then Essendon. Mm. Ah,
I know.
Actually, no. Melbourne will go in. Port will go out. That's it. That's the finals.
That's a big call.
So Sydney will finish fifth. Doggies, Essendon, and Melbourne will round out the eight. I do not see Port making the finals. Before I say this, let's see who they're playing. So they've got Port Adelaide next week. They've got Collingwood. Crap, they'll win that. Then they've got... where are they? Where's Port Adelaide? I'm going blind. They got the Doggies. They'll lose that. And then they've got...
Gold Coast.
They'll win that. Okay, maybe they will make finals.
See, it's too hard. I feel like it's sewn up now. Like, the bottom four is sewn up.
No, screw it. I'm going to stick with what I said. Port out, Melbourne in. Yourself?
Right. I'm saying that it stays the way that it is.
Just saying the same way. So, yeah. The way it is at the moment is Port, Sydney, Doggies and Essendon.
But in saying
but you
that...
you want Sydney top four, was it?
I think Sydney will finish fifth. Not four.
Oh, you changed. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Well, I think they're a chance to finish fourth, but I think realistically, they'll finish fifth.
All right. There you go.
You know, as we've said, but I still believe that number eight or spot eight will come down to the final game.
Yeah. I agree. All right. Moving on now from our predictions, way too early predictions, even though there's only three rounds left.
Oh, my God.
And we're calling them way too early predictions. As per the Geelong Advertiser earlier in this week, and this is in relation to Patrick Dangerfield's tackle on Matthew Caruso, which saw him be rubbed out for 1 week and now ineligible to win his second Brownlow medal on the trot. Is the tackle dead after seeing Brody Grundy's incident last night? Unfortunate incident, the tackle that he did on Ben Brown, and it'll most likely be looked at by the match review panel. Is the tackle dead?
Considering that so many happen during a game, I would say that it's not particularly dead per se, but it seems that the grey area between what is a good tackle and what is a dangerous tackle has become even more grey. That's what it seems like. It seems that going hard at the player with the ball has become a sort of contentious issue, especially with the Brody Grundy case. And as we spoke about off air, is that the Dangerfield and Grundy incidents have their differences in that Cruiser had already let go of the ball, but Brody Grundy was like truly just trying to make sure Ben Brown let go of the ball, which was seen in the decision that was made. He was given holding the ball. So it's weird that a tackle that was awarded a free kick will now be looked at by the match review panel. And I think I heard Mark Robinson say it after the Dangerfield one, was that you can't punish the consequences. You have to punish the action.
Exactly. That's what I was talking about with my mates earlier in the week. If Caruso wasn't concussed, this tackle would not be looked at at all whatsoever. And also, I'll pose this question to you. If it was just, say, a player who is not as high up as Dangerfield, in the name sort of thing, would this tackle have created the same... Would we have looked at this tackle the same way if it wasn't Dangerfield that did the tackle?
No, I don't think so. I think it would fly under the radar.
Yeah. That's exactly my thoughts as well.
It would definitely fly under the radar because you'll have commentators being like, oh, that was a bad tackle or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think there's not that much scrutiny on those kinds of players that do
This tackle was hyped up by the media so much. And
it was.
Kind of forced the MRP to do some action and give him a week.
Like Brody Grundy, sure, give him a fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But the thing is, though, it's because of that precedent that's been set by Dangerfield. They do have that differences. So, as you said, in Dangerfield's one, Cruz had gotten rid of the ball, and you can see Dangerfield go with the motion. Every day of the week, that is a free kick.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that Dangerfield tackled Cruiser, and obviously he was in that position because his arms were pinned. He went head first and unfortunately got concussed. He did play, however.
True. Yeah, Cruiser did play yesterday.
Obviously, they couldn't see that.
Yeah.
In Grundy's one at the moment, Grundy's one on Ben Brown. Ben Brown, like you said, had the footy. Had his arms pinned, but Grundy didn't even lift him up, nor did obviously Dangerfield. Yeah. And he just brought him to the ground, unfortunate head.
Yeah.
And he was concussed, sent to hospital. At the moment, doesn't look likely he'll play next week.
No.
From that precedent set by Dangerfield, I'd really struggle to see the match review panel not giving Grundy a week.
Yeah, that's what I think.
As much as I don't think they should. I mean, players shouldn't be punished for skill execution. It's not even an error.
Yeah.
It's just perfection. I mean, Dangerfield one's fair enough. He'd gotten rid of the ball, then he got him. But
he got it carried away.
Even still, like, a week suspension for that.
Yeah.
Like, just give him a fine or something.
Yeah.
But if he's got a poor record, then give him a week.
Yeah, because then there could be malicious intent in it.
That's just a tackle. And obviously it's unfortunate that he got concussed. I think what that needs to happen in the off-season is the AFL needs to come out with a stance and say, okay, these are the type of tackles that we're looking at and we're going to be red hot on this season. If you do this, you will be suspended.
Yeah.
And I think it's just, this all centers around like the sling top tackles.
Yeah.
Those two tackles there were not sling tackles. Dangerfield's erring on the sling tackle side, but it was just a fair tackle.
Yeah.
Grundy, if he gets a week, it's crap, but he probably will.
Yeah.
It's just the precedent set.
That precedent, you'd have to.
Yeah.
But in saying that, it is good that the AFL wants to protect the player with the ball and protect their heads and
Which
is what it should be, but it is hard when it's a skill that is integral to the game.
Yeah, I mean, everyone gets taught like that. You pin their arms down and you bring them to the ground. I don't like it when I see players lift them and those tackles have been punished in the past. Neither of those two tackles lifting them and they'll puke the ruckman.
Yeah,
I mean, you've got to try as hard as you can to bring them to the ground. Yeah. So, yeah, it's very tough. And, crap, I was going to bring something up. I'll edit this.
Yeah.
There's something good. Shit.
They're a ruckman. You need to try really hard to
get
them to the ground.
There's something. There's a point. Okay. And in terms of Brownlow eligibility, you don't want to see a player become ineligible for what was deemed a skill execution error.
Yeah.
A poor tackle.
Yeah.
And they get rubbed out of the Brownlow, ineligible.
Mm.
Should they change the criteria a little bit down the Brownlow wise? I don't think they should change it like from what it is, like saying that people were talking about in the media saying get rid of the fairest part. Keep all that. But if it's like a tackle, I mean, surely can have that bit of leeway there.
Yeah, we were talking about this on the Wednesday edition of the Sports Desk, and we sort of was saying that, you know, the grade that a incident gets by the match review panel, and if it's found to not be malicious or not behind the play or like something like Dangerfield's, they can keep their eligibility.
Yeah,
because it was an error and not a sort of like snap judgment like type thing. But I think to sort of close this case with the Dangerfield thing is, let's talk about it again on Brownlow night and see if at round 22 he is actually leading the Brownlow count. And if he's not, then it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I don't think it will be. But just for the sake of the for argument's sake, they should. What was his tackle deemed anyway? Was it deemed rough contact?
Well, yeah, because Cruiser got rid of the ball and he like slinged him and slammed his head into the ground.
They got to have all these degrees between rough contact, because there's rough contact where they're like, there's a punch to the stomach.
Mm.
You know, there's... Oh, God, it's so much.
It's a circle debate. You just go round and round.
But if Dangerfield was having the season that Dustin Martin's having, it'd be even bigger. Dusty's won the Brownlow.
Mm.
You heard it here first. Okay, so we'll move on from...
Speaking of circle debates, we're on the Sports Desk. We've covered this issue to death. And it seems every single time we just talked about it around and around and around in circles. That issue being... To you.
Cricket.
Yep.
The pay deal. It's over.
The pay deal. Oh my God. It is finally over.
Let's go through the details. So, they've initially agreed to this. There's a heads of agreement to this deal. So, at the moment, the immediate contracting of men's and women's players to will enable this month's scheduled men's test team tour to Bangladesh to go ahead as planned. And speaking against Bangladesh, we've only played them twice in test series. The last one was 06. So, about time we're playing against them. And they've improved a lot. So, there's, back to the contract, significant increases in payments to all players, male and female, at international and domestic level. And there's a greater investment in grassroots programs and facilities with the players to provide up to $25 million, yep, which Cricket Australia will match through savings to their administrative costs over the next 5 years. Now, speaking of the women, their payments to women's players will rise from the previous total of a measly $7.5 million to $55.2 million. They are the highest paid women's sports players in Australia at the moment.
They are the highest women's paid sports players, but also the total player pool is guaranteed to be $459 million over the next 5 years, which means that the men are taking $400 million of that. So...
yeah.
We got a long way to go, Ben. Yeah. We got a long way to go.
Nevertheless, this is huge.
But it's huge. It is huge.
Come on, let's celebrate. This is massive.
Credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
And at least all these girls will be professional athletes.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
This is incredible. And I feel this has come at quite the perfect time as well with the rise of AFLW now. So, because a lot of players from cricket, basketball, soccer, all these women's players now come into the AFLW because they've always loved AFL.
Yeah.
But AFL aren't playing them too well. I think it was average pay about, was it $8,000?
$8,000. For the season,
That's nothing.
Which is nothing, yeah.
That's nothing. So obviously that's a first season. That'll rise with years to come. But yeah, the AFLW is going to have trouble competing with that. $55.2 million. That's great.
So yeah, so that's huge. But our question for this is sort of around, what does it mean? Did the players come out on top?
Well, I think the major thing that the players were wanting was that they wanted an agreed from Cricket Australia that they'd get a slice of the revenue, which is predicted to exceed the $1.67 billion, which is forecast by Cricket Australia. So the players now, they will share in 19% of that, to a cap level of about $1.96 billion. That was the major thing they were fighting for. The Cricket Australia wanted to keep it as a fixed rate for 5 years, but now the players, they get their revenue and they get a share in that. So that includes all the broadcast deals, which is probably the major thing that they wanted to do. So that's a big win for the players. And obviously Cricket Australia, they still get to keep their $25 million dollars that'll go to grassroots cricket, which was a major thing that they were pushing.
And, you know, there was definitely arguments on both sides of these things. Like, the players, obviously, without a revenue share model, you're sort of taking their part in the game away. They no longer are the partners of the game. They turn into employees of Cricket Australia, which isn't a good look for a sport. But on other side...
It's old style, old fashioned.
But on the other side of that, Cricket Australia needs that money for grassroots so we can continue to be a cricket powerhouse and we can improve. Because right at the moment, I think we're ranked 7th in T20s, 4th in one days, and 3rd in tests. So
I'm going to trust you on those numbers. I've got no idea.
I was in the...
But that sounds about right.
Women are number one in every single format.
What was it? Was it about 10 years ago when we were top in basically everything?
Everything,
it would have been bar D20s, I reckon.
Yeah.
We've never been particularly strong in T20s. We've always been strong in the test format and one-day international format. So,
which are the formats you want to be the strongest in. So that's why Cricket Australia has pushed so hard for this grassroots. So we can continue... Or, you know, become a powerhouse once again without all this uncertainty that we kind of have. So I think there's winners and losers in all of this, but I think the overall compromises that Cricket Australia have had to make about the pay deal in terms of the revenue model and things like that, I think this means that the players' bargaining power definitely means that they were the ones that have come out on top.
It was huge as well. I mean, the... Not the banter, but just the in-house talking and murmuring all these tweets from players, Cricket Australia officials. It was massive. So it's just about time it's done. Big news is the Ashes are finally going to they'll go ahead at the end of the year, which
is good. Which is that is the main thing out of all
is
of
there,
this.
Is there two night matches? Not
just
tests?
The one
just
night
the one
test,
at Adelaide?
The women are playing an Ashes series in November as well. So it's a big year for Australian cricket. So thank God they got it all done. Yeah.
All right, we'll move on to tennis now, and we'll stick with Australian players. Talking here about Nick Kyrgios, and he recently pulled out of the Atlanta Open, I believe it was, a tournament in America, nevertheless. Yep. He was booed off the court, and this time it was a shoulder injury. Yep. Now, we'll bring a bit of background into this. Previously, I think it was maybe 3 weeks or a month prior, he pulled out of another tournament.
Yep.
Seizes to my memory. But he pulled out with a hip injury,
yep.
I believe. And the night after, or maybe two nights after, 3 nights after, he was spotted coming out of a nightclub with two Australian players, I believe it was. Two younger Australian female players. This obviously doesn't look good.
He was also caught playing social basketball in Canberra.
Yes, that's right as well.
Mm.
So, yeah, that does. It's obviously not a good look when he's been pulling out of tournaments with injuries.
Yeah.
So should he, like some of the game greats, Djokovic and Federer, who have taken time off from these injuries and come back and done considerably well in Grand Slams, Djokovic now taking the rest of the year, is it?
Yep, rest of the year.
And Federer taking off Roland Garros and then coming back to win Wimbledon. Should he follow in their footsteps and take some time off?
I think he definitely needs time off.
Mm.
I think not just because of injuries, but also because he also had the death of his grandfather earlier in the year.
That killed him mentally.
Yeah, which...
That killed him.
Killed him mentally. And I think also a lot of these injuries are coming from a lack of mental toughness and also the...
I reckon lack of conditioning as well.
And lack of conditioning, like the unwillingness to sort of train and play.
Yeah.
And sort of, I think all of this sort of comes out on the court and it ends up just... piling on and on and on for more mental stress, all of this kind of stuff. He has the added scrutiny of everyone in the sports media in Australia telling him that he needs to get it together. So it kind of seems like he needs to take 2 months off or something, you know, have a break, go back.
Take the year off.
Take the year off.
Screw it. Just take the
year
off.
Go back, start training in, like, November, do 2 months of solid training, make a comeback for the Australian Open.
You know what, actually, it feels like ages we've been talking about him.
That's what I was going to say too.
He's like, only 22.
Yeah.
He's only 22 years old. That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And we're just talking about him as if he's like a 10-year veteran. It's like the talk with Tomic. Tomic, I think he's 2 years older, as you fix that mic now. He's about, what, 24? Tomic's fair enough. I mean, Tomic even, he came out in the, you know, those press conferences after Wimbledon. And he was doing that interview with a current affair. He says his passion is not with tennis. He's never liked it. He's just like, I'm getting paid. I'm good at it. I've never really. I've only been playing 50%. Blah blah blah. Whatever.
Yeah.
Never liked Tomic. Don't ever please put Kyrgios in that boat. I'm sorry. I'm so strong on this. Kyrgios is completely different. I know he's got his antics and he's got a bit of flair about him, and that's what I love about him. Obviously, he throws his racket every now and then. If you remember young Roger Federer. Roger Federer was exactly like this, but obviously never had the publicity like this and probably never went as over the board as Kyrgios.
Yeah.
But Federer was like this, so there's a lot of similarities between the start of Roger Federer and Nick Kyrgios, but obviously Kyrgios has probably been doing it for maybe 1 year too long than what Federer did, and look how good Federer is right now at the moment. So I think Nick just needs a complete break from tennis. He said that his passion's with basketball. He's always preferred basketball over tennis, and who knows, he probably likes more other sports than tennis. Just take a break from it, because playing tennis professionally is a grind. You're playing year on year. All it is
stop.
Just
it's
tennis.
All year, yeah.
Tennis. And because tennis is an individual sport.
As well.
You're training 24/7. And Kyrgios, as we've seen from him and as he's told us, he doesn't particularly like it. And he's not really keen on training for tennis and keeping fit for that. So I think he just needs to take a year off. Take the rest of the year off from tennis. Still keep up your conditioning.
Yep.
Still play all the basketball if you want to, but monitor your injury.
Yep.
Keep it within the restraints that you're not going to well, hurt your back anymore, hurt your hip anymore, hurt your shoulder. Ice them up all you want. Play as many casual games of basketball as you want. Have some fun. Do a heap of conditioning so when you come back, you are going to make it, you're going to make it easy, you're going to make it harder for your body to get run down, to get tired, and to succumb to injuries.
Yeah.
So I think he just needs a break, a complete break from tennis, switch off, mentally get refreshed, come back for the Australian Open, and win it.
Yeah.
How good would that be?
That's what I think too. Like, come back and like...
I love Nick, like, sorry. Yeah. I'm not going to hide it. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of Nick Kyrgios, and it's tough. I mean, his persona, it's always going to have fans in uproar when you see him pull out. But you could see in those two tournaments, he was in pain for the whole match.
Yeah.
And yeah, it looks like he's just throwing the game away. He's like, oh, that's it. I'm going to throw in the towel. I've had enough. What can you do, man?
There will come a point, though, where we can no longer stick up for him, you know? So
I'm going to stick up for him as long as I can.
He needs to step up. Like, you can be as young and silly and whatever as much as you want, but at some point...
The media doesn't help him. Yeah. The media just have a huge spotlight on him the whole time, and every single action he does is just highlighted and painted in a negative picture.
I know. Like, but he needs to, like, if you want the negativity to stop, then you need to get it together. Like, you need to start training. You need to have a coach. You need to stop being seen at nightclubs with other players. You need to stop playing casual basketball.
With the nightclubs thing, though, it was a nightclub, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Whatever it was. I mean, can't players... This is for all sport now. Can't players be allowed freedom to do whatever they... Not do whatever they want, but do what, say, we do is normal and not really looked at in a bad light?
No, I get
without,
that. But
without them also being seen and cast in that bad light.
Yeah, like, I get that. But I'm just saying that, like, in terms of, like, being injured and not performing... My thought when I think of
that's got him there.
Yeah, this is like not performing and being seen in a bad light. Do everything you can to get yourself out of it. Don't succumb to the pressure. I'm all for people like getting like going above and beyond it, like showing that you're better than it. Like, you know, so he needs to start making some decisions about his future and his form and his tennis.
Tournament was Washington, by the way, the one he pulled out.
Yeah, before he, you know, before, like, people just give up on him. The negativity will just turn to people just being like, well, there goes Nick Kyrgios.
Yeah, because of that precedent that he's set, that he's, like, the bad boy.
Yeah.
He's done all this stuff in the past. It's not going to help him. Yeah. So,
like, I just want to see him stand up. That's why I wanted to see him make the right decision and take some time off so he can come back...
Well, look, he plays...
Because that's standing up. Like, taking time off is making the right decision to make sure you're getting your body right, you're doing everything you can. And then even if he came back and said, I'm giving up tennis, like, good on him. Make the hard decision.
Well, he plays in the Canadian Open, according to Google here. He's playing against Viktor Troicki in the round of 64 match, Tuesday, our time, 2:30 a.m. So, I'm going to have a prediction here. If Nick does not make it past, let's say, three games, but if one of those matches he's pulled out of injury, go out completely.
Yeah.
If he goes past three games and he's actually playing well, stay a little bit if you want to. Yeah. But this tournament's going to be the telling factor,
yeah,
I think, at the moment. It's unfortunate. I love Nick. Sorry. But yeah. All right, moving on from tennis and talking about
Nick
the sport.
Nick Kyrgios' favourite sport.
Yeah, Nick Kyrgios' favourite sport, basketball. And earlier in the week, the NBL announced that three NBL clubs will be taking on three NBA teams early in October over there in the States. So the Brisbane Bullets, Sydney Kings, and Melbourne United will be taking on the Utah Jazz, Oklahoma City Thunder, and Phoenix?
Yep, Phoenix Suns.
Phoenix Suns, I think.
Yeah.
I'll double check them now. Will these games help grow the game in Australia? And second, should these games have been held in Australia as opposed to over there in the States?
I think with the first question, I think that for some reason, and I don't know how this happened, you probably have a better answer, like, we'll have the answer to this question, is that, like, NBA is so popular in Australia.
Oh, it's massive.
It's so popular here.
The NBL nowhere near as popular
and then,
as the
NBA. The NBL is just, like, no one really pays attention to it. So I would say that because the NBA has a massive pool with Australian fans, that it will, like, if the NBL teams do well, it could raise the profile, it will raise the profile of the game here.
I agree.
Because I feel like Australians have some weird, not weird respect, because obviously they're all very good teams, but they have a lot of respect for the NBA, their teams and their players. So it would be great to see those people who, you know, follow the NBA so sort of passionately to come over and support some NBL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Phoenix. So Sydney take on Utah, Melbourne take on the Thunder, and the Brisbane Bulls take on the Phoenix Suns. I was a bit opposite to most basketball fans here in Australia. I actually started supporting the NBL, and that was the South Dragons, due to my dad having an association with the South Dragons. I was able to watch them. And Joe Ingles was playing for the South Dragons back then, and now he's playing for the Utah Jazz. And Joe Ingles was very young when he was playing for the South Dragons. He won, what, Rookie of the Year in his first year? So, obviously, you're going to win Rookie of the Year in your first year. What am I talking about? So, I was a bit opposite. I started supporting the NBL. But now that I'm older, all my mates are just really NBA fans, and you see there's a huge difference in the level and the caliber of the players in the NBL, NBA and the NBL. The NBL is definitely improving its profile ever since Larry Kesselman, I think is his name, the owner of Melbourne United, has taken over as league boss for the NBL. He's definitely raised the profile of the NBL, and there's more of an interest as well since they signed that agreement with Fox Sports, who are now broadcasting all their games. But this is a massive step, and I think either way, this is going to boost the profile of the NBL.
Yep.
But like you said, if these teams, they play well against these NBA teams, no doubt there's going to be a lot more NBA fans going to watch NBL games. And
Yeah.
But the major thing that has to come out of this is that there has, hopefully, surely, there'll be an NBA game of some sort.
In Australia.
NBA players in Australia.
Yeah. That's
got to happen.
That's got to happen. That would be the next step. It's like, take them to NBA, take them to America. I understand.
I'll pay,
like,
whatever it is. I want to watch it.
Yeah, but it's like, take them to America first so that these clubs can kind of see, you know. That,
well, the NBL,
that
the NBL, real
deal.
Who was it? Terrence Ferguson. He played for the, not 76ers, the Adelaide 36ers. Last NBL season, he got drafted by the Oklahoma City Thunder, who Melbourne United are playing, in the first round. I think it was pick 20-odd or something, maybe pick 23. That strikes a chord with me.
Well, yeah. Well, this is the thing. Like, we're seeing more NBL players getting drafted to the NBA.
But he chose, instead of playing college, because over in the States, you don't get paid to play for college.
Yeah.
The college gets all the money. They don't
get
paid. So he chose, instead of playing in college, to play in the NBL.
Mm.
So now, because of that, that's going to create more attention there in the States, to say to players who are thinking, should I go to college, should I not, that they can still get drafted into the NBA if they play professional basketball in Australia. That move was huge.
Yeah.
This is even bigger.
Yeah.
This is just, they've all come together, combining. NBA game in Australia 2 years. Come on, bring it.
Make it happen. In 2 years, and then, you know, as it grows, you can have NBA All-Stars versus the NBL All-Stars.
Imagine if the NBL one day becomes as good as the NBA.
That'd be
pretty funny.
It won't, but like...
It won't, but just...
It's a bit too small, but it'd be huge to see an NBA team here at some point, at any time. Like, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. All right, now I'm just going to quickly do some of the trades that happened in the NBA trade period. That's just... It's still going at the moment because Kyrie Irving has requested a trade from the Cleveland Cavaliers. Many clubs
Which is tense.
Imagine if he doesn't get traded and he has to play with Cleveland next year.
That'd be so awkward. We spoke about this on the Wednesday edition of the Sports Desk as well, and we were all kind of like, so awkward if he has to stay.
Yeah.
But also I understand why he wants to leave.
Yeah.
You know?
He wants to be a star. Doesn't really like playing a LeBron show. I understand, but I don't as well. I mean, LeBron James,
you're
guaranteed a spot. You're guaranteed a spot in the NBA Finals next year.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want to stay?
Yeah.
Like,
it's like,
I don't know.
It's like the Neymar thing as well.
Yeah, Neymar going to PSG.
Like, Neymar going to PSG. It's like, why would you leave a team where you can play with Messi, Suarez, Piqué, Ramirez,
money.
Like, all of those people to go to, like, Paris?
Money,
but also
and
because...
to be the star player.
To be the star player.
That's the way things are
ego.
Going right now.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. I'm just going to go through the bigger trades that have happened. So, Chris Paul went to the Houston Rockets from the LA Clippers. 8 players went from Houston to the LA Clippers.
That is so weird. 8 players,
eight players for one person.
Jeez.
Major players that went from Houston were Patrick Beverley, Patrick Beverley and Lou Williams. So they've lost 2 guards there, but nevertheless, they've gained an all-star caliber point guard in Chris Paul, and their backcourt, the Houston's backcourt with Chris Paul and James Harden, is going to be exciting to say the least. And the terms that actually Chris Paul's come on, it's only a 1-year deal. It's a sign-on deal, and he'll become a free agent the next year, as I'm aware, anyway. Another big trade that happened was Jimmy Butler going from the Chicago Bulls to Minnesota. He went along with the number 16 pick, who was picked as Justin Patton. Chicago, they got Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, who won the NBA dunk contest, I think it was 3 years ago now, and they got the number 7 pick as well. Winner there, definitely Minnesota. I mean, pairing Jimmy Butler with Kat, as he's known, Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Wiggins, is massive, and Minnesota now starting to look like a force in the West. And a final trade was Paul George. Now, Paul George said to Indiana that, or he told the media that this season, this as in like this upcoming season, that his focus was all on Indiana. Like, okay, I'm playing for Indiana this season. Whatever's going to happen in the past is going to happen. Then he came out a month later saying that I'm looking to move to, and this has been posted by the media as well, Los Angeles. So he's been traded from Indiana now to Oklahoma for Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis. Oklahoma and Indiana have both done very well in this trade. Paul George is sort of a replacement for Kevin Durant because Oklahoma lost him last season to the Golden State Warriors. Indiana, they will get something for Paul George in the end because he was going to be leaving them in the free agency next season. So it's a win for both teams. If Oklahoma do well this season, it may be interesting to see whether or not Paul George still goes through and decides to leave to LA in free agency. So very interesting there. But nevertheless, Oklahoma could be back in the top 4 seeds for the Western Conference. And the Western Conference is absolutely stacked this year.
Yep.
Cleveland and Boston will be definitely competing there in the East. Obviously, Boston now signing Gordon Hayward. So, yeah, time will tell out of the East. Cleveland, you think, still make it. But, yeah, the West is going to be a lot tougher for the Golden State Warriors now. So, makes it a little bit easier for Cleveland or whoever comes out of the East to compete with them in the finals. But it's Golden State. You never know. All right. Soccer now. The Matildas.
The Matildas.
They beat America.
Oh, it was so exciting. It was honestly so exciting. 28 attempts, had never beaten the US. A Tamika Butt goal in the 62nd minute of that opening game of the Tournament of Nations. And we did it. We did it. We beat them. So good. Avenging the losses of before. And exactly, about time. But I think what this really shows is, and then obviously the 2 follow-up games, we had a Sam Kerr, who we'll get to in a moment, a Sam Kerr opening half hat-trick to defeat Japan 4-2. And then we had a 6-1 win over Brazil, nonetheless. So we have lifted the first ever Tournament of Nations. And I suppose the question now is, how long until they lift a World Cup?
What is the Tournament of Nations, by the way? They just brought it in this year, was it?
Yeah, the US team just started it.
Yeah,
which was...
sucked in, they didn't win.
Yeah, exactly.
Cop that.
they lost the Olympics last year. So, like, what can we do? Let's start a tournament.
Yeah, let's start
and
a tournament
they made the rules
win.
In such a way that it was like, if, say, somehow all of the teams ended up on the same points for, like, wins and losses or whatever, that the team with the highest ranking would go away with the trophy, and that was the US.
Sucked in. They lost first round to Australia.
Next,
are there World Cups in sync with the men's?
No, so
it's not 2 years apart, is it?
They're 2 years. So out, no, a year apart.
A year apart.
So the women's next World Cup is 2019 in France,
yep.
And then the following one will be in 2023, which Australia is hoping to host.
There you go. That'll be the one we win. I think we win one out of the next three.
Yeah.
I mean, soccer is just lifting massively in terms of the women's sector. It's also the men's, but particularly in the women's. And this win against America is going to go a long way to boosting the younger females' hopes of playing, of representing Australia, and hopes of succeeding when playing for Australia. Because knowing that you can now beaten a team that you've never beaten in 28 years is just a massive 28 attempts, sorry, is massive. Because I mean, if you went up there and you play a World Cup final, 2019, say, against America, you're going to know that, okay, the last 28 times that we played against America, we haven't won. We have no chance here.
Yeah.
Now if you've beaten them, there's going to be this whole wave of confidence that comes through. And, yeah, I reckon 2-3 World Cups time, we'll win one.
Yeah.
I've got this feeling. We've been doing well.
We've been doing really well. And the last World Cup, we managed to make it into the round of 16 with a very, very young side. So I think with the team playing the way they're playing now, and with two more years under the belts of a still young team, we could be lifting that World Cup in Paris.
Let's hope so.
I think.
That'd be good.
And then I think this Tournament of Nations win also helps Australia's chances of holding the World Cup in Australia in 2023. And I think all of our chances for a World Cup rest on the shoulders of young Sam Kerr, who was opening half hat-trick against Japan, was quite phenomenal, who were in earlier, I think 3 weeks earlier, for her club in America, sealed a game by kicking a hat-trick in 12 minutes.
Jeez.
So
12 minutes.
12 minutes.
Far out.
So
that's
is Sam
quick.
Kerr the best player in the world?
For women's?
Yeah.
Well, at the moment, the form that she's been in this Tournament of Nations, I guess you have to say she is.
She is, or if she isn't, she very much will be within
very
a year
soon.
Or so.
How,
yeah.
Is she 20?
23.
23. And she's the younger sister of former West Coast player Daniel Kerr.
Yeah. Which is also interesting, because as I told you
off air,
the Fremantle Dockers AFLW team did come a knocking for Sam Kerr, and she knocked them back, and quoting Sam Kerr, said that she much rather prefer play real football.
Oh, no, don't talk about this now. This will be an argument for another day. This will be an argument for another day. Do you agree with her?
Oh, look,
please tell me you don't.
Like, I respect and love both codes.
Sorry to all you soccer fans, but...
So, yeah.
Oh.
I know. It's annoying, but I get it. Like, if you're getting poached, you may as well try and throw in a quote like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Sam Kerr, sassy and amazing. So, you know, I think we have the Asian Cup next year, World Cup 2019.
I'd like to see her get tackled and then call that not real football compared to soccer.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Get her... No.
I'm not putting it down anyway, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, don't say that.
Sorry,
don't say that. I've lost her now.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of her anymore. That's it. She's lost
me. That's done.
She's lost me completely.
And speaking
of
being,
I like soccer.
You like it?
I mean, what's wrong with it?
Yeah.
What's wrong with football, the round game?
The round ball game.
Oh, yeah. Also, we do have to touch on this. Unfortunately, former SBS broadcaster Les Murray passed away earlier in the week. I mean, he was an icon of Australian soccer for 40 years has been?
Yeah.
1970s he started broadcasting Australian football, and he really put soccer on the map for
Australia. Yeah.
So, yeah, I remember listening to him in the 06 and the 2010 grand finals. Even though I'm young, all my soccer memories probably all sort of relate to Les Murray.
Yeah,
some
for
way.
Sure.
And yeah, it's just unfortunate that he passed away earlier in the week. I mean,
couldn't see the Matildas beat Brazil 6-1. I'm sure
he would have been very, very happy.
He would have been very, very happy.
And
I'm the same. I think all of my memories of watching the soccer on television involve Les Murray in some way.
Yeah.
So
everyone there, he's
Vale Les Murray.
Very sad. All right. On that sad note, unfortunately, we do have to end this edition of the Sports Dev podcast. We're sorry we've been away for was it been about a month?
Yeah.
Something. We did say that we were going to get going, get cracking. But
you're at season three now, new season.
Yeah.
New season, new us, you know?
Let's hope we last more than 2 weeks. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, hope you've enjoyed listening to us. Hope we haven't bored you to death too much. And, yeah, from all of us here at the Sports Desk Podcast, myself and Lucy, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
We sure will.
Yep.
Yes.
We'll see you in a fortnight's time. And we'll be talking again, nothing but sport, which are the games that unite the people of the world.